I'm confident I'll locate it again, but for the sake of making me feel a little bit less of an ass than I feel about it.
And also, if you did put your email on the list and you didn't get a New Year's announcement, put it on again and write more clearly.
Yeah.
You got a lot of bounce back.
Okay, so thank you all again for coming, and in carrying on with the theme I've been talking about, the Buddha's famous metaphor of the second arrow. For those of you who are new or unfamiliar, the Buddha said that in life there are inevitable arrows that we get shot with. Those are from the outside world or from inside the body. When we grow old, we get sick. There's also the external arrows of just people acting unskillfully or bad things that happen in the world. But the Buddha said the bulk of our suffering is the arrows that we follow up shooting in ourselves. Why is this happening? We ask of things that happen to everybody. Why me? We ask of things that happen to everybody. What's going on when we live the same basic story as everybody else? There's this tendency to take everything personally or become confused about the universals of human life, which the Buddha said in life there's going to be losing the things we love. There's going to be at times getting things we don't really like. There's going to be not getting what we want. There's going to be sorrow, lamentation, grief. There's going to be things happen in life that we don't really like. That's part of being born into the human realm, is that we're going to experience disagreeable sensations, events, but the important bit is how we relate to these inevitables, how we relate to the inevitable unskillfulness, the inevitable pains, the inevitable obsessive thinking, the inevitable that really we do have control over, how we shape our experience, how we shape the way we respond as opposed to react to life. So these are the second arrows. And one of the most important tools that the Buddha talked about in reducing the bulk of suffering that happens in life is this concept of taking the I out of it. And I'll talk about what that means. There's this story that he tells about a monk who's on the verge of enlightenment, just about to drop into nirvana. And the one thing that keeps him from falling into this place of lasting peace is these thoughts of, look how peaceful I am. I'm so peaceful. I'm doing such a great job at this. I've accomplished so much. I am a truly advanced meditator. I am blah, 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 blah. So there's this I quality that we add to experience, that this stuff that's happening is owned by this me, this I. It's a really important concept. In one of the Buddha's most effective teachings, the Anatta Lakkhana, where he had, according to the text, the most people dropping into enlightenment, what he taught in that teaching was he had his monks meditate. And he said, during the meditation, note if any of your body states, your gut sensations, your thoughts, your perceptions, your sense consciousness, any of these things, if they really are constant and lasting and could really, as you observe them, provide you with a real lasting identity or sense of self, who you are. Just observe without taking it for granted that your thoughts are who you are or your body is who you are. Just watch what goes on. And of course, as they observe their meditation and they observe the mind and the body, they notice that to have a mind means that there's constant thoughts arising and there's these constant feelings, gut sensations, there's body pains that arise. It's just part of what the mind and the body does is that they generate sensations and thoughts and feelings, etc. Which is not to say that eventually we can't quiet the mind, because we can, but it's very much in the nature of the mind to throw different thoughts and moods. There's different gut sensations in the body, and there's pains. And these things happen. Unlike what Descartes said 2,100 years after the Buddha, Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Because there's thoughts, that must mean that there's a self that has an existence. And the Buddha said, no, you think because you have a mind. That's it. It's very important to understand this, that the Buddha is not saying that at any given moment in time we don't have a self. What he's saying is that we don't have a concrete, lasting identity that doesn't change. Our identities are changing. The self we have is changing. There's not this core somewhere inside of us that determines who we are and is somehow immune to change. It's actually, this identity is constantly changing. It's really important to note this. There are, of course, tendencies that we have. We have habits, we have tendencies, we have behaviors that we do. If you study clinical psychology and attachment theory, of course, the interactions that a child has with its mother in the first 9 months, it very much can set parameters to types of behaviors in the future, but it doesn't determine your identity. It doesn't determine to a concrete degree who you are, nor does your genetics, nor does anything. The Buddha taught that rather than there being this pre-existent or lasting self that we have to find, and you've heard that, people say, I want to find out who I really am. I want to find my true self. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a year off, travel, and I'm going to find myself. How you're going to find yourself by constantly traveling is... traveling is a wonderful thing. I love it myself. But the idea that filling up your mind with external sensations is going to help you find something that doesn't even really exist is, for me, sort of fun to hear. But the Buddha said, rather, self is an activity. I'll say that again. It's an action. It's not something that exists beforehand. It's something we create with what we do. We're creating ourselves as we act and as we think. We're not acting true to ourselves or untrue to ourselves with our thoughts or our actions. Our thoughts and our actions are creating who we are. It's very important to get this idea. Sometimes we say, oh, I wasn't myself today. Yesterday I was myself. Today I'm not myself. All you're saying is that today you're doing things that are not in your tendencies, but they're every bit as much who you are right now as yesterday your thoughts were who you were then. Who you are is being created by your thoughts and by your actions. There's not a pre-existing self that you're somehow acting in accordance with or not in accordance with. You are creating that. It's very much the same as what the Buddha taught about life itself, which is that we have this tendency to think that in life there's a meaning and we've got to find it. It's there somewhere. I left it underneath the cushion, but I've got to find it. I've got to figure out what the meaning of life is. Actually, interestingly enough, the Buddha taught that meaning is what we bring to life. We create meaning for life. Because actually, much as the existentialists and the philosophers ever since Schopenhauer have taught, that there really isn't a pre-existing reason for life. The reason you're here is to fuck, reproduce, and die. That's not a purpose, folks. That's just survival of the species, but that's not a meaning. That's the pre-existing role for human beings, is simply to reproduce and die. So by that measure, if you don't reproduce, you're sort of screwed, right? You're sort of screwed up. I guess I've screwed up. So, but that's not a meaning. There is no pre-existent meaning. The pre-existent meaning does not exist, nor is there any pre-existent self of who you are. These things are what you do. You create the meaning of your life, and you create who you are by what you do and what you think. So it's an activity. It's not something that is there for us to discover. It's there for us to create. So this is important for a number of reasons. The Buddha, in one of his famous suttas, the Honeycomb Sutta, taught that he was asked, what is the reason why there's so much confrontation and aggression and war and conflict in life? And he said, well, basically it boils down to what he called papancha, which is proliferation of thought, thinking a lot of stuff about ourselves, and that boils down to this idea of not that there are thoughts or feelings or body sensations happening, but the Buddha said it's because we always add an I in front of stuff. I'm thinking. I'm experiencing this. I'm in pain. I'm rich. I'm poor. I am this. I am that. So we take whatever states we're in, and we say, oh, there's something really personal about it. Not that, for example, if there's a pain that arises in your body, we don't think, oh, there's pain. We think the thought, I'm in pain. And by that simple activity, we take something that's universal and we, without realizing it, we make it about ourselves. We start to believe somehow there is something unique about what we're experiencing, that not everybody experiences at some point or another pain, rejection, abandonment. We all have setbacks in our careers and in our art and in our relationships, and we all have times when everything goes easy. But we all tend, when we're experiencing these things, to think that there's something really, really personal about it. When things go well, oh, I'm doing really well. When things go badly, oh, I'm having a shit life right now. So this I-ing is responsible for so much stress, because instead of just experiencing life, experiencing the pain, experiencing the good things, the elation, experiencing things going away and things arising, we add on a story about ourselves. Oh, I've always been the one who wasn't good at this, or I've always been good at that, or I've always been this, or I've always been that. We add this entire sense of narrative and this sense of uniqueness to everything we experience. And because of this, at the very least, there's this sense of A, that we have to carry around this story, this inner biography in our head, which creates so much noise. And then on top of it, because we take it so personally, we really have this doubt that anybody will ever really understand us. And when we do find somebody that seems to understand, we have this elation and we marry them immediately or move in with them. Oh, she understood me. I had to move in with her precipitously after 2 hours of, because it seems such a breakthrough that anybody would understand. But in fact, honestly, the important things in life, everybody understands because everybody goes through it. There isn't a single person alive who will not understand what it's like if they live long enough and don't die precipitously. And that's to use the word precipitously twice. And must have read it somehow. Or anyway, people will all know what it's like to be rejected. We'll all know what it's like to be left out. We'll all know what it's like to not be invited to some event. We'll all know what it's like to get something out of the blue. We'll all know what it's like to lose something. But when, for some reason, when we lose our keys, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe I lost my keys. What the fuck is the matter with me? Everybody fucking loses their keys. There's nothing the matter with you. But we take it all personally. When we stub our toe, every single human being who's ever had a foot has stubbed their toe. But when I stub my toe, the first thought that comes up is, son of a bitch, what the fuck is the matter with me? And then, who put that wall there? You know? Who put that fucking wall there? Who put that refrigerator there? Son of a bitch. So we take it all personally. The next thing also, that the other drawback, of course, is that it distorts everything we experience. Every time we add an I in front of something, not only are we saying it's mine and we're separating ourselves from other people and believing that our experience is unique, but we're also distorting our experience because we're taking it personally. We think we're stuck with it. We don't get it. We feel we can't get distance from it. If we're in pain, for example, and when we're sitting, and we think, oh, pain, then we can observe it. Because if you think the word, oh, pain, then you can just see, well, okay, how does pain work? Well, pain is sensations. Then it's also like there's other gut feelings. Oh, no, I'm in pain. And then there's like these thoughts, taking it personally. But if you really believe it's my pain, you can't get any distance from it. You can't observe it. It's just, oh, my God, I'm in pain. It's never going to go away. What am I going to do? It creates this emergency state when we take things personally of needing to do something. On the other hand, if we don't add I in front of our experience, then we don't need to do something because it's not ours. It's just part of the human condition. Now, this is bigger than just pain. If somebody says something really shitty to you, if you think, oh my God, why am I being insulted? Then you have to do something about it. But if, in fact, you say, oh, this is what unskillful people do. They act like this. Nothing about me. That's just this person doing what they're doing right now. I just happen to be in the vicinity of them. But they're really, if somebody else was here, they wind up receiving exactly the same treatment that I'm receiving. You know, if I wasn't, this person wasn't blocking my way into the subway, he'd be blocking somebody else's way. There's nothing personal about it. But when we take it personally, when people say things or do things, then we have to do something immediately because it's about me. Why is this person being mean? Or it's because of me. They're insulting me. No, they're what they're doing is being unskillful, and they do that to other people too. And in fact, everybody gets insulted. We all have been many, many times, if you live in New York, many, many times this week, you're going to get you're going to be, you know, treated occasionally inhospitably, or somebody's going to do something rude. And if every single time we take those, of course, personally, to that degree, we shoot ourselves with those second arrows. So the more we take the I out of it, the less suffering there is. The more we just say, oh, here's rudeness, here's unskillfulness, here's somebody who's outrightly aggressive or passive aggressive or whatever. This is what this happens. This is what life's about. There's nothing about me in this. I'm just adding the I into this story. So you get the idea that this is a cause of a lot of stress. And so what do you do? Well, this is one of the great reasons why we meditate. On top of just the practice of using the breath to relax the body and the mind and using the mind to relax stress that we carry around with us that makes us act unskillfully and makes us get into all sorts of difficult situations. And one of the big things we can practice in meditation is watching thoughts occur without adding the, that's my thought. That's about me. This is, you know, for instance, if you're meditating and financial insecurity arises and you start thinking, oh my God, I don't have enough fucking money. You have two choices. You can either think, oh my God, this is true, I don't have enough money, and kiss your peace goodbye. Or B, you can think, oh, here's financial insecurity. Hello. With the knowledge that every fucker who lives in the city is fucking financially insecure. Welcome to the human race. If you don't take it personally, if you just say, oh, here's pain, here's financial insecurity, here's doubt. I can't meditate. Oh, hello, doubt. I know that you come into every mind of everybody who meditates, so I'm not going to take you personally. I'm just going to see you as a thought that's passing through. The more we can practice that, then in life when we are actively in obsession and worry and fear, we're not inevitably glued to them. We're not compelled to climb into those thoughts. We do have a slight choice of seeing, hey, wait a second, this is what worry, this is what anger is all about. This is what it means to have a human mind, to have these thoughts. I actually don't, at least I can, maybe they can throw me for a loop, but if I don't add that story that I'm the only one who's going through this, we at least have that much of a way out. Just dropping that sense of uniqueness, that sense of I am the one who's got this worry, I'm the one who's got this fear, I'm the one who's got this hurdle, I'm the one who's got this thing. If we can approach our experience without adding that I, me, mine in front of it, that is such a huge boost in making our minds a more hospitable place to be in. Because we can observe our thoughts rather than having our thoughts push us around and force us to act. So many times in life, the thought, I am lonely, adds on to just a feeling of loneliness. We add, I am lonely, and the next thing you know, you might be screwing somebody you shouldn't be screwing, or at some bar you shouldn't be, or, you know, calling up somebody you shouldn't be calling, right? Just because we added that, I am lonely, in front of the feeling of loneliness. If the thought arises, oh, there's nobody calling me up, we can just say, oh, there's a lonely thought, hello. Or we can add I in front of it and turn it into an entire state that we then have to do something about. I'm lonely, fuck it. I got to do something immediately. So that's what's the way we react to it inside. As well, it's really important in the arc, as I was saying, to externally practice by not taking the things that people do to us as if it's literally being done to us, as like, oh, this person is acting this way because I'm here. Reflect again and again and again on this idea that if somebody's acting unskillfully, it's not because we suddenly appeared in front of them and normally they're totally nice. But instead, remind ourselves constantly, oh, this is the state that this person's in. I just happen to be there. None of this is about me. If we can do that, if we drop again the I from the story and just see, oh, okay, this person is stressed out today, then we reduce so much of the story, the stress, the suffering that we create with those second arrows. Now, finally, I will say that the Buddha did talk on occasionally about if we are going to have this sense of a self or who we are or an identity, he said, because it's something we're doing, use it strategically. Be clever. Be creative. Instead of feeling that you have a given self that you can do nothing about, that you are trapped in, which when we have a sense of a pre-existent self, we're trapped. We think, oh, I'm not good at music, but I'm really good at writing. Bullshit. You've just, all of these things in life are developed by practice. So the more we say, I'm this or I'm that, we trap ourselves. But if you are needing to have an identity, and they come in useful, I mean, you know, planning for the future and stuff like that, it's good to have a sense of, you know, that it's you that's going to be on an airplane in the future or whatever. But if you have to have a story about who you are, use it strategically rather than feel that it already exists. Create a story that will make you act skillfully. For example, the idea of, I'm somebody who's generous. If that makes you act out of generosity, or the story, I'm somebody who cares about other people. The key with the strategy of adding a sense of self is don't cling to it. Because there'll be times, no matter what story you've added into your life, that you'll wake up one day and you'll just not be capable of doing. There are all days we wake up where if we tell the story, I'm really funny, you're not going to be fucking funny that day. Just not going to happen. You can be funny 364 days a year, but there will be one fucking day when you're not fucking funny. And so if you cling to that story, I am funny, I've got to be funny, that's who I am, there's something wrong with me if I'm not. Or I'm smart, I'm clever. If we add these stories and don't hold on to them and use them to spur us to a sense of skillful action, it's great. But if we cling to them to the degree that we suffer when we're not smart, or we're not funny, or we're not clever, or we're not personable, or we're not social, or we're not inhibited, or we're not whatever we're telling the story is, then we've clung to it too tight and we're causing ourselves stress. So again, the idea is as much as possible in life to simply see what arises without adding this sense of it's mine, I own it, that's who I am. Instead, try to greet as much of our experience as part of the universal experiences of what it means to be human. If we can do that, that simple, although profoundly difficult act will reduce so much of the stress that we add onto our lives and make so much of our challenges things that we can meet. So anyway, that's my talk for tonight. And just practice seeing pain where there's pain and happiness where there's happiness. Thank you.